Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson with the Digital Education Podcast. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, prepping for the holiday season and Christmas time. It's a great time to be in schools, but also an interesting time. Today, I get the pleasure and privilege of being with a friend, but also a former colleague and somebody that I love talking about education with, leadership with, innovation with, Kevin Bruni. He's been in education for 15 years in Michigan and Illinois as a teacher, coach, athletic director, and now really kind of the reason why I'm talking to him today, but really to kind of get his experience in his new kind of venture. It's called Grit Leadership for Educational Athletics. And we'll talk a little bit about that today, but I think, Kevin, let me start with this. Right, you've been a coach, you've been a teacher, you've done all of these sorts of things. Where did your interest in developing coaches come from?
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on the show. It's really fun to be a part of this, and obviously to spend more time with you always sharpens me, so I appreciate that. I think that the interest came as I kind of changed job requirements from being more of a teacher who coached into administration after, you know, getting involved in some of that while working with you. And I became someone that started to do athletics, and I started to pivot my interest from coaching 12 kids to starting to coach adults, because I felt like God was kind of putting in my life this opportunity to teach leaders how to impact kids, which means the tree just got way bigger of people that I could possibly have a positive impact on. And God started to give me that vision as my family started to change, and opportunities to coach 12 kids on a basketball team or 8 kids on a golf team started to go away just due to the size of my family. And God kind of pivoted my passion towards, you know, working with coaches so that they could impact kids. So that journey started about three, four years ago, in the fall about of 2016.
So this, the Grit Leadership program and some of the training and some of the evaluation, we'll get into really the what, but tell me, like, how did you at what point in time did you say there's a better way to develop coaches? There's a better way to do this. There's a better way to mentor and to lead them so that they can lead the kids. Like, where did the idea for this program and this system come from?
Yeah, I think a lot of places. I mean, one was being a coach and somebody who was being involved in evaluations from a receiving an evaluation standpoint and feeling like, man, a lot of the stuff I'm being evaluated on, this athletic director is not really there to evaluate me. It's not really a situation where he's there to see these things happening, but I'm still being evaluated on them. Most of them were administrative in nature, and they weren't really about necessarily coaching or helping kids. It was more about the administrative function of coaching and how that related to the opinion of the athletic director. And it became more of a, I have to defend my place scenario, and he defends his place. And then we kind of have this odd situation of evaluation or confrontation. And the more places that I coached, the more I realized that was common. And it didn't feel good to me. Like, it felt like there was a situation where I was being judged instead of helped. And so as I became someone interested in these things, I started to refocus what I thought coaching was about. I learned about how schools are so much about developing kids to go on and do great things after their high school experience so that they're ready for the world. And I learned about kids really struggling to manage what this world is like based on how they're brought up by well-meaning, loving people in great high schools. They're not ready to manage society. And I thought, we go into all of this stuff to help kids and make sure that kids can do a great job. And we're actually, as high schools, not doing as good a job of that as we can. And so for athletics, I thought, what piece of this can I help? And that became kind of where this was all born. And we really do a lot of work helping coaches understand how they're impacting kids. And we use research to make sure that coaches are impacting kids in a way that will, you know, kind of change the way that they're being socialized by the flow of society today, which has become kind of a crazy thing. And it's a lot of frustration for many of us in Generation X and that are millennials, that we struggle with that and the way that kids are socialized today. So learning some of this research kind of helped me kind of refocus how we can lead for kids' benefit, and evaluation is starting to change that way instead of a athletic director and a coach kind of having an adversarial evaluation.
So there's a couple points, and I want you to help me understand or help the listener understand to a little bit to what the program is or what the evaluation system is. But there is, I think, one of the few of the things that I've learned is one is a common conversation between, you know, a coach and athletic director. Two, you've given it from what I've seen and from what I understand is you've given, you know, the students or the athletes feedback opportunities and consistent feedback opportunities in this program. And then the third thing is, I think, which is interesting to me, and I want to get into it a little bit later, is you focused in on growth rather than success. You focus in on development rather than destination, right? And so help me understand or help us understand a little bit of like what the program looks like and how you use it to develop that relationship with that coach and to provide those kids those voices so that then the growth together can happen.
Yeah, so the way that we recommend doing this with schools and with certainly did with our school is that the research that we came about, which really focuses on three main factors of leadership, understanding growth mindset and being able to lead with it, and strategies of how to do that well without accidentally creating fixed mindsets in our kids, which is what we often do. The way that we give feedback is the second point, and really focusing on teaching coaches how to give feedback the proper way, with a focus on the process of things happening versus the results of things happening, because that will directly impact their mindset, being a fixed mindset if we focus on results and a growth mindset if we focus on process. And the third aspect is about doing it all as an empowering or a wise leader from Duckworth's research, where it's someone who holds a high expectation with kindness, not letting people off the hook, trying to be liked, and not being mean, holding a high expectation. So those three aspects, we go about teaching our coaches all about those three things and making those things real to their sport, their actual day-to-day work, how they can impact those three things into the kids to help them. So the education part is a big part for us. Every coach who comes a coach in our 5-12 system, they hear that information in a training as part of their onboarding to being a coach for us. So education is number one. And then two, we wanted to say, if this is all about the kids and their experience being ready to go and changing the way, you know, breaking the flow of society's training of them so that they can actually have the tools necessary to make it, which we just talked about, then we have to hear from them about how our leaders are doing. And so what the evaluation does is it allows us to hear from those athletes about how their leader is delivering on those three aspects of leadership. We hire coaches because they're great at what they do. So we're not here to try to get a coach out. We're here to help a coach better reach kids, right? We're fortunate in our school to be able to hire high-level coaches that understand their sport. And usually what they need most is a little bit of help on how to reach the kids most effectively and provide them the tools they need to get the most out of them. And so that's really where we focus. And the kids then provide us the feedback on how they're delivering on those things, which then starts the third part, which is the conversation and the partnership of the athletic director and the coaches partnering together about how they can reach kids. So the coaches fill out self-evaluations and the kids have an evaluation they fill out. So you can compare those notes and start to see, hey, do I see myself the way the kids do? Which is a huge thing, right? Do we have an inflated or deflated vision of ourselves as a leader or not? And so we want to make sure we can partner those things up. And then second, we get to brainstorm and actually work together. No longer is it me telling the coach, you know, you're not doing these things and the coach defending themselves. It's about, hey, these are things the kids are feeling about how we can reach them most effectively. What can we do? How can we be creative within our sport to help them reach this area where we're not hitting the mark quite right? And so it becomes more of a partnership, and that's really energized our coaches. It's really energized our athletic directors, just to be excited about making progress that's real for kids. And so one of the things that people will say is like, I can't believe you let the kids evaluate the coach. Well, it's not really that. What it is it's them a chance to give us an opinion on how the coach is delivering on these things. And so that we have a place to start a conversation. The athletic director is the one who evaluates the coach. The kids just give us insider information we've never really had before. And so that's been the exciting part for us, is to feel like we're really reaching the kids in a way that is helpful to them for their futures.
So, and you've been at this now for a couple of years at your school. And then you've started work with, you know, some other schools in this process, and, you know, some public schools as well as private schools.
Yep.
What are the things, you know, I guess I could always imagine the areas of resistance, right? But what are the things that you're seeing? And you mentioned some positive things about your school just in general about, hey, we are seeing this development. We are seeing this. Like, what are some of the things that you're seeing in a positive way from the data, from the research, from working with your school, but then also working with other schools as they begin to implement really what is a totally different way of looking at coaching, collaboration, feedback, and this process?
Well, I think one thing that's huge is we know from the research that the process creates growth mindset, the focus on the process, whether that's a coach to a kid or an athletic director to a coach. And so this whole evaluation, we have to practice what we preach. And so we're really focused on the process of improvement for our coaches. And then that is then, you know, they're taking that idea, knowing that it's about their process of improving the kids. And so what's great about it is we've seen a shift in kind of the mindset of the majority of our people. I can't ever say all, because we can't control that, but certainly a ton of our coaches have jumped on board being excited about improving their leadership and improving their kids. And what the coolest thing is now that they've kind of realized the power of the process, they're seeing so much more internal motivation that their kids are having on a daily basis, because they're not focused on if they did something great or bad. They're focused on, did you do it with enthusiasm, energy, effort? Was the process being correct in that sort of technique that we were talking about? Coaches have started to be creative about this learning process, coming up with, you know, evaluations they can send their kids after games that are all focused on the process of playing their sport in a competitive situation versus how did we do today, you know, and we lost, and so now that means this. And so they've really started to create a lot of creativity amongst themselves, and they've created a culture within our school and within our programs that's about process of improvement, which means we are, according to Dweck and Duckworth, when we focus on that, we are creating grittier individuals that are more malleable and able to handle the ups and downs and the challenges of life. And even starting to talk to parents about that, we've started to hear the language change in our school system. There's a lot of talk about grit and perseverance and growth, because that's filtering through coaches, through kids, and we're doing parent meetings and teaching parents about it, which again can be challenging because a lot of people have fixed mindsets and feel like they're being judged instead of wanting to grow. But we've certainly started to turn that corner and really help our community start to become a more process-oriented community that's focused on growth versus the judgment and the fixed mindset of this is success or this is failure. And so that's been kind of the tangible stuff. We've obviously seen data go up for our coaches the longer they've been in the system. We're seeing their warmth and their expectation levels rise as they get better at that. We've seen them become more creative. We haven't won any less. You know, you stop focusing on the winning, and we haven't won less because we're getting a lot out of kids. And so, you know, we win just as much as we did before. And it's been really fun thing to watch our coaches and kids start to talk about. That's been the biggest thing I've noticed, is just the language change and the culture shift amongst our community in general.
So let me ask you a question, because, you know, and this is more so of the overarching analysis of athletics in America right now, right? Mm-hmm. So give you a little bit of time to prepare, but it is this idea that whether it be high school sports or college sports or professional sports, right, the ring is the only thing. or you get into these club sports where it's, you know, it's all about me, right? You know, it's mm-hmm. it's about me and my development and my opportunities and me paying for playing time or whatever it might be. Is this like, how does, like, as you work on this program and as you develop this program and as you look at it as a multidimensional way to develop coaches who develop athletes who, you know, and then as you engage parents, like, how is this countercultural in some ways to just the overarching and overpowering emphasis of our just athletic culture right now?
I mean, it's the opposite, right? This is the opposite. I mean, like you said, everybody is all about the way they look, the status they have. Parents get brought into that. I mean, you know, a good friend of mine calls it the, you know, sportianity, the worship of sport and the success that it can give you or bring you. And it's so damaging for kids. And parents start doing this because they love their kids and they want their kids to be successful. And all these things that are happening are not because parents are bad people or kids are bad people. They're trying to do well. They're trying to love their kid and help them with their passion. But accidentally, and this is what we talk about a lot in our education, is accidentally we as leaders are doing things that are harming our kids and creating a fixed mindset. And so when we put all the focus on the ring and on the status and on what's best for me, and that's the narrative in society too, when we start to do that, we form a very much a mindset from a young age. A lot of kids, 6, 7, 8 years old, have a mindset that for me to get positive feedback, for me to be worth something, for my parents to be proud, for my coaches to be proud, I have to be great at this one thing, which is one reason we're seeing less multi-sport athleting around our country, is kids have to specialize to make their parents and their coaches happy, because if I'm not good at something, why would I even try? Which is the opposite of growth, right? It's the opposite of trying to become better and more well-rounded. And so, I mean, this is a lot of ways the opposite of what is flowing in society, which is why I think it's important to talk about. Because if we're to go with the flow, we're going in a place where 84% of kids, according to Stanford University, are overwhelmed by their requirements on a daily basis. The book iGen, you know, also, which is a newer book that just came out. And they're talking a ton about these stats. The Stanford stats are from 2012. The iGen stats are from 2017. That's a 5-year span. They're exactly the same. The anxiety, the overwhelming nature, the fear. The only thing that's gotten worse and that's changed from that is kids are more willing to attempt suicide now than ever before. And that's because there's this part of society out there, from those things that I've read and studied, and I'm sure you have too, that just says you need to look great all the time, and if you don't, you're failing and you're no good. And so this is taking the focus off of that for kids and teaching them about improvement and growth, and that you're never fixed, you're never one person, you are loved, cared for, and you can always be changed and always be different. And when we get our tree of leaders doing that, we have a chance to impact thousands, exponentially, the kids in the society against that flow that I believe is very damaging for our society.
So, Kevin, I want to ask you a question, because I think it's a practical question. It's something that you've heard me kind of ponder or whine or, you know, just even groan about a little bit is when we build programs at schools, right, our athletic programs, we don't build the places for kids to figure out, for kids to discover, for kids to not be good, right? I go back to, you know, when I was a transfer into sixth grade, right? I joined the sixth grade basketball team. You know, I think everybody made it, but, you know, I was like on the C team, right? And then eventually had the opportunity to play enough basketball and to enjoy it and to like it that I got to play on the varsity team in high school, even though we were no good. But what I watch nowadays is that place where schools, like, okay, so we're talking about this and we're talking about developing coaches and we're talking about improvement. How have you thought about, or what are you thinking about, or what would be your encouragement to other coaches, athletic directors out there as they look at even their programming to say, hey, how do we even create space for kids to just figure out what they enjoy and what they like, or what they could even get somewhat good at? Like me, you know, I got good enough to play high school basketball. Not well, but good enough to play.
Yeah, I mean, I work in a middle school as well, and we want every kid to participate up to a point. And then at some point, we start to have a developmentally appropriate team, which means kids that at this time are a little more advanced can play with more advanced kids, and kids that need to play at a level that isn't the same, they get an opportunity to do that. But we're participatory in nature, and I think that's really good. But we also talk to the parents when we start to split developmentally and say, hey, this is an important part of kids' lives. This comes through the grit leadership filter that says, when we sign up, we don't always get what we want. Right? We can work hard and we still don't always get what we want. And I would submit to you that that's a good thing to learn, right? That desirable difficulty, it's a difficulty in someone's life that helps them have to figure out and navigate challenge and in a way that is desirable for their growth, that desirable difficulty, a phrase coined by trainugly.com. And I love that phrase because it teaches people that challenge is good. Challenge creates growth. And we have to provide that for kids. It was provided for me because you had to make a club basketball team when I grew up, right? You didn't just pay money and get on one. So I didn't make any of them. I got cut 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. And I was an all-state honorable mention kid for basketball. But I still got cut from all those club teams, right? And that just drove me harder because I had a leader in my life who, without knowing all this information, kept telling me, just grow, just get better. You know, this team is not the end of the world. This doesn't mean you're a failure. So I think kids have to be, and largely our society's taken that out where there isn't opportunities for desirable difficulty. Parents are fixing it before it gets difficult. They're encouraging kids to quit something that they're not great at instead of trying to persevere through it. We take a lot of those desirable difficulties out of society. And at our school, we try really hard to get participation. Everybody can participate, but at some point we start to do it developmentally before they get to the high school. So there's kind of three tiers to that, right? We've got rec, that's all participation, all equal. We go middle school sports, 5 through 7, that are participatory and equal, but playing time is not equal. Right? Like we might separate the teams equally, but we're not going to play kids equally. And then we get to 8th grade where we have developmentally appropriate separation. And then 9th grade is obviously what everyone else has, where there's cuts in one team and all those things going on. So we try to scale it up. And we talk to parents about some of these things that they don't like to experience. And because they love their kid, they don't want to see their kid disappointed and going through a hard thing. But letting them, walking alongside them in that process instead of fixing it for them is a big difference that we try to have our parents walk through with kids instead of what society is typically doing. So,
Kevin, I think one of the things that I found interesting, you know, just even this conversation, but then knowing about you and having worked about you, is the collaborative nature by which you work and how important the relationships are, the relationship between athletic director, coach, kids, school, parents, you know, the relationships that are developed, that this is not something that's done to people, but it's something that's invitational, that you're invited into it. Mm-hmm. That's not schools in general, right? I mean, have you seen, you know, this may be even a larger question. Have you even seen some of these ideas impact, like, you know, how your school or other schools, or are you seeing, you know, this just impact, you know, other places and not and beyond athletics?
Yeah, I mean, our school talks about it quite a bit. I mean, I know when I talk to our coaches, it's impacting their families because they now hear themselves saying things and accidentally the wrong way, even within their families. I mean, we think that when you listen to the things that we're teaching about the research, I mean, you're running it through so many different filters in your brain. You're running it through as a husband, as a wife, you're running it through as a parent, you're running it through as a teacher, you're running it through as a coach, and you're seeing in all these different places that we interact in the world, where am I hitting it right and where am I accidentally doing it wrong? And so we think, and we've felt, at least in our community, that it's reaching families as much as it's reaching athletes, right? Because people are going home and thinking about these things. And we feel like, hey, we don't know better than you as parents, but certainly we want to provide you information that allows you to have the tools to make the choices you want to make with your family. And so we feel like we're helping families, we feel like we're helping kids. And the more places we can get leaders connected to understanding how they can do this more effectively according to the research, the better chance we have to impact those kids to be against that flow of society in a way that they can actually make it. And they're not part of those percentages that Stanford and iGen talk about with the anxiety, the fear, the depression, the overwhelming nature of things, and obviously the attempted suicide. The more we can reach them, you know, the parents and the leaders, we feel like it's really making an impact on the kids in our community. So the biggest thing it does for other schools that I've been aware of is it gives them a philosophy at which to approach issues and problems within their school, saying, hey, you know, this has been an issue of common parent complaint, but now when we run it through this filter of things and we use this research and these ideas, hey, now we've got an answer for that, that kind of centers our school community on here's why we're doing it the way we're doing it. And that helps parents and people understand, you know, how to get on the same page with impacting kids in the right way.
So let me ask one final question, right? And I'll let you do a little critique. I got to be your boss for a little while, right? You know, for a few years. Mm-hmm. We got to work together. We got to work with some pretty phenomenal people for that period of time too, that are school leaders or very accomplished people, you know, in different places in life now. And we've had a lot of fun conversations since those days about our lives, our work, you know, and the things that we get to do in education and in the lives of our schools and our students. Like, what would be one thing that, you know, back from those days that you like, you know what, this stuck with me, we did this well. And then what would be one thing like critique, like, you know what, if I could go back and restart it or redo it, like, what would be that thing that'd be like, you know what, like, we should have done this different?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things that when you look back on it, we were fortunate to do well. One thing that we talk about in grit leadership a lot is not being prescriptive and allowing the kids to be a part of the process, as you talked about earlier, letting them have that desirable difficulty. And one of the things that I know that I went through when I was being led by you and with some of those other people was you never provided me an answer. And I think that was really important. You stoked interest, you challenged, and you already knew what you wanted the answer to be, but you never gave me that answer, right? You kind of pushed me or questioned me or guided me to figure those things out. And I think you did that with all of the people that you led. And I think to look at how we would ask people to coach and lead now based on this research, that is absolutely the case, because it created ownership, it created creativity, it gave us a internal motivation to try to search more, to learn more, to grow more. And, you know, having somebody that would just come in and say, hey, this is not the right way to do this, this is the right way to do this, I need you to do it that way, I don't think I'd be the person I was today if that's the type of leader that you were. And so that's a big part of, you know, me experiencing that also helped me understand why this research is correct, because I experienced a lot of this with you. I tell people all the time, like, I got really lucky. Like, our kids don't have to get lucky now if we can all teach them this information, but I got lucky. I had a dad that did these things, and I had, you know, you as someone who was in a very formative time of my life that was, whether you knew all these things or not, you were doing them for me. And that really changed my life and my ability to persevere, have grit, have a growth mindset, and all of those things. So I think one of the things that we did really well was you didn't provide answers. You provided questions and opportunities to grow. And the people that really took that were the one, you know, that really grew and went on to do bigger things were the people that took that challenge and tried to grow and were open-minded and growth mindset oriented to do that. So it's just proof for what I do now, that's a great way to do it. As far as ways that we did things different, that's a harder one, because, you know, I was all in on what you were doing and what we were doing. And so I don't know. I think I don't have a lot of critique in that sense, as I think about it right now, but you didn't give me a lot of time. Maybe that was by design. I don't know.
Well, I appreciate that, because the positive is where you go to. It's the negative, right? The critique. I'd say, you know, one of the things, and I don't know how this comes across, and maybe this is conversation for later. I think the biggest thing for me was if I had to do it different, right, or think about it different, is impatience. You know, impatience with, you know, and it is the process, right? It is the conversation. It is the discovery together. And it is impatience with people who don't pick it up right away. And I think that's where, if I had to do it over, I would be much more focused internally on my own patience with others who didn't jump on board right away or didn't, you know, show the inclination to kind of go in the direction that we wanted to go or in this process together. Cause not everybody wants to embrace the process. They just want to get to the end result. And I became, I think, you know, as a younger man, you know, in those days, impatient with those people. And I think that's a place where I think we could have created more patience through the process and with the process and with people in their different stages along the way.
Well, and I just to add to that, I mean, there's a great article that I read earlier this year about, you know, not starting with strength. That's kind of about impatience, right? Some of us believe that the best way to lead is to be strong and to have a defined idea of where we're going. And unfortunately, when we feel like we have all the answers and we start with strength, you know, the research would tell us that we actually alienate ourselves in this generation, because people envy that. They then take that envy and they create discontent, and they don't want to partner with you because it makes them feel somewhat inferior. And none of that stuff is intentional when you start with strength or with impatience, kind of pushing too hard, but certainly it's a big result. And we talk a lot about making sure we start with warmth, right? Start with kindness and with understanding versus with strength. The strength will come out, you know, as you get there, but that's a lot of times unnatural for people. And certainly I know you have told me in times that you've started with strength and with that impatience, and if you could do it again, you'd have done it different. I mean, there's certain people that at the school we were at, you would have liked to kind of have a redo. And certainly at my school now, one of my big mentors at the school I'm at now, his biggest regret is starting with too much strength and saying, hey, this is the way it's going to be. It's going to be like, you know, and kind of being really tough. And that alienated him initially. And it's been a long repair. So, yeah, as part of that, I mean, one of the big things we talk about in great leadership is warmth and your ability to deliver warmth in your leadership. And I've definitely seen that to be true in both places that I've spent significant time, that the regret or maybe the way they would do it different is exactly what you're saying, the impatience or starting with too much strength. And the research would kind of back that up and say that's true. That is not as effective. So.
Kevin, I appreciate your time today and, you know, just this conversation. I know we could go on and on and on.
How long is this? This is a 3-hour podcast?
Yeah, all right. Where can people find out more information about, you know, the work that you're doing, the program that you're developing, and opportunities just to learn more about, you know, about the system that you've you know, begun the process of developing and implementing?
Yeah, the website that I have kind of hosts the evaluation system, which again was developed by a PhD level survey creator along with me, trying to create validity and reliability, take emotion out of survey questions. It kind of houses that, but also on there is some basic information about the program. It's not going to be this glitzy, glammy website, but it certainly is a great place to get information about what we're doing. And then it also hosts your evaluation page if you're a school that subscribes to us, and all the resource pages. And that's at gritleadershipea.com. And so that's a great place to go. And also just contacting me. I have an email that's pretty easy. It's gritleadershipea@gmail.com for gritleadershipeducationalathletics@gmail.com. So gritleadershipea@gmail.com. You can contact me. We can get in touch. Passionate about these things and love talking about it with people. I think it's good for kids. And so anybody who's interested in, you know, learning more about you know, what might possibly positively impact their kids and their community with this information, I'm all about talking about it.
Kevin, really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.